We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
11:01, hour number two of Show and Vern on a wantiferous Tuesday. I am Ron, the show Hughley. That is Joshua Lamont Vernier, and yep, he won't say it, but I believe his pants are split. Steve Serta is producing this bad boy.
What?
Had a lot of fun in the first hour. Good first hour. We appreciate you listening to us. Once again, Show and Vern is presented by Crossroads Investment Lending, the fix and flip guys at kclynn.com. Vern just said something to me during the break that was so ridiculous before we get to this great tease that I had on the other side about the Chiefs and Patriots.
You just asked a question.
Vern posed, it was a great one. Got you thinking. Probably didn't. Vern posed a question to me. Ron, let's just say you and your wife got divorced. Do you think you could ever date someone who has the same name as your daughter?
It's a good question.
It was. I said,
easy. I was originally going to pose it to Binkley, but you were here, so.
I said, easy. I said, not only that, I think I could date somebody who has the same name as my son.
No, that's weird. Like, I don't want to date somebody that's got the same name as my sisters.
I've done that.
That's a deal breaker for you?
Yeah.
I could never get it on with someone named Josh, so we're different on that.
Oh, I could date a Ronnie. Easy. Yeah. Son, same name as my daughter, my son.
Because you seem like you're a talker, and you're saying their name. So I feel like you hollering out Ronnie's name.
It's more of a saying my name type of a. I'm a more of a saying my name type of a guy. Always have been. Always will be. I saw this... This from Arrowhead Pride, and they said that the Chiefs and the Patriots are a top six rivalry in the National Football League. And I would not consider them a rivalry. I think it's really, really hard to put that claim on rivalry in pro sports. There are some, Yankees, Red Sox, I think Giants, Dodgers, maybe Packers, Bears. But I don't think there's a lot, especially with the length of time to call this a rivalry. But what I am intrigued about, Vern, is I'm curious. I wonder how the Patriots view the Chiefs. I believe the Chiefs look at the Patriots, and when they see the Patriots on their schedule, that's a team they circle. That's a team that I do think the practice week, the intensity level is up, the focus is up. It's a game that Pat and the boys want. I think Tyrann Mathieu, Frank Clark come right in, and they want that because probably the Patriots are that team for everybody in the league. But this Chiefs team specifically with the history, with the playoffs last year and games this year or two games last year, I think it's a team that the Chiefs look at. I also, though, don't believe that the Patriots consider the Chiefs a rival, but I do think the Patriots – look at the Chiefs in a different way than other teams on their schedule. I do think they know when they play the Chiefs, and I think they know when they see the Chiefs, there is concern. There is, okay, we may not circle them, but we know about this group. And I don't think it just has to do with just the Pat years. I think even I think it more has to do with Andy being there and there's respect level. Vern, the way that Belichick would talk about Tyreek Hill let me know that there is a concern level when they see the Chiefs. And that's what I would think, judging from the Patriots. I feel like they don't look at them as a rival, but I do feel like that is somebody that the Chiefs are a team they're concerned with.
Yeah, having a conversation about a rivalry between the Patriots and Chiefs is to me, it's stupid. What you're basically talking about is good coaching. That's it. I mean, and Bob Sutton did a number on this town. Just because Bob Sutton went into every single game going, no, I'm doing what I do. We're not changing anything up because that's Tom Brady. No, we are sticking to what we've been doing all year. No, to me, the fact that the Patriots circle or acknowledge the Chiefs or you get the best of Belichick, the best of Brady against, I think that's just because the Chiefs are good. The Chiefs are good and led by a guy that we both agree is an offensive genius and Andy Reid. But I think the Patriots have that same kind of respect or had that same kind of respect for a Peyton Manning-led offense, for a true Pittsburgh Steeler defense, for the Jerome Bettis, Fast Willie Parker backfield. I feel like that's just good coaching. Belichick acknowledges who stands in our way of winning a title. Andy Reid, to me, is the most formidable opponent that the Patriots have faced of late and will continue to face moving forward.
Yeah, but when you say good, there are some good teams that I don't feel the Patriots, those teams have the attention. Like, I think the Steelers and the Chiefs have the
Steelers aren't there anymore. Not, but they were. The Colts were.
See, the Colts with Peyton.
Right.
The Colts with Peyton was a rival. I consider them a rivalry. But, like, I think the Chargers are a good football team. I don't think that the Patriots have the attention, or the Chargers have the attention of the Patriots like the Chiefs and the Steelers have. I do think
the Chargers don't have our attention here in Kansas City, and we're in the same division, and they should be a real rival. We don't take them seriously.
I know, but you said because they're good. I'm just saying I don't think it's just the fact that they're good.
Super Bowl good, then.
I think there is, and I think the Chargers, you can have an argument, are Super Bowl good.
They've shown you nothing to believe that. They've done nothing over the past decade to lead you to believe that when the chips are on the table, the Chargers and Phillip Rivers are going to make the right decision. Andy Reid, Patrick Mahomes, Andy Reid has already showed you that with what he did with Alex. Now you give him the talent of Patrick Mahomes. No, they demand your attention in the AFC, and Belichick's no fool.
That's fine. I look at the Colts and the Chargers as teams that have opportunities and real opportunities that could come out of the AFC.
But let me ask you this. What's the reason you always, and you will again this year, say the Patriots? I'm going to pick the Patriots. Because no one's beat them yet. The Colts and Chargers, those are the sexy picks right now. But, Mr. Evidence, you need to see it first from the Colts and from the Chargers. They need to win a big playoff game before you're going to put them in the I'm going to, at least. I need to see the Colts, the Browns, the Ravens, all of those teams. I need to see them win a big playoff game before they belong in the Belichick's Patriots and Andy Reid's Chiefs category in the AFC. That's how I look. Look, the Colts, I can make a case that they are the third best. I could come up with a reason why they're the second best team in the AFC heading into the season. But as far as Super Bowl contenders, I don't put them with the Chiefs. I don't put them with the Patriots because I haven't seen them do it yet on the biggest
stages. Yeah, coming into this year, I think the Colts are right there behind the Chiefs. And I think the Chargers and the Colts are right there.
But Frank Reich and Andrew Luck, tell me if I'm wrong, that doesn't instill the same kind of reverence that Andy Reid, Patrick Mahomes does.
No, I'm not saying it does.
So they're not in that group. They don't get that you're my equal. That meme of Spider-Man pointing to Spider-Man. That's not what the Chargers That's not what the Colts are.
I don't believe that anyone is their equal. I don't believe they look at anyone as their equal.
Andy as their equal. Bill Belichick looks at Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid and says, this is my most difficult task. This is the hardest I will have to work. This is the team most equipped to dethrone us. And therefore, they're the closest to being their equal. There hasn't been an equal to Belichick Brady in the history of the NFL.
That's what I'm saying. Nobody is their equal. I don't think they look at anybody. Yes.
But as the knocking on the door, the one in the catbird seat, I think it's still the Chiefs.
That's what I said. And I don't think it, and what I'm trying to explain from you is, I don't think it just has to do with just because they're a good team. I think the Chargers and the Colts are a good team. I don't think that they get the Patriots respect the way the Chiefs do. Is all I'm saying is I don't think they're a team, as someone texts here on the text line, that the Patriots are circling. But, yeah, they have their attention in a way that only I think the Steelers have had their attention in the past. And a lot does have to do with their coach and quarterback conversation. But
Steelers, Colts, Chiefs. Of the run that Belichick and
Manning,
Brady have had.
I think even Peyton in Denver.
Yeah, and that was, what, 2 years?
The 2 years that Peyton.
Sure.
It's just Peyton. Wherever Peyton was, that they were rivals. All right.
Peyton, Andy, Steelers.
All right, here we
That's
go.
That's the group.
Here we go. Listener 22, Andrew Luck is washed.
Yep.
That's what he gave you last year. That's what you should take from last year.
I wouldn't do that, guys.
Headed into his second year.
And you got Steve
of an incredible
now.
Offense that is only going to get better.
All right.
With a fantastic head coach and one of the best general managers in football.
This segment of Show and Vern presented by Mazarese Jewelry, four generations of distinctive jewelry located in Leawood.
I was listening to Bill Self and reading his comments, and he spoke to the media about the team here of recent. And something that stuck out to me was his comments about David McCormick, McDonald's All-American, backup center. Then he started starting at the end of the year. It's interesting because we think about his last month or so has been huge at Kansas in terms of the players that he's gotten rid of and then the players that he's brought in. This team looks substantially different. They've gone from, in my opinion, a chance where you were like, I don't know what this team's going to finish, and then Devon Dotson comes back and they bring in the kid Moss from Iowa. You're thinking, okay, this team has a chance to be a Sweet 16 team. To then Silvio is back, and then they get the kid that they stole from Michigan and North Carolina, Jalen Wright. They bring him, Jalen Wilson, excuse me, and they bring him in. And now this team looks like a top 10, top 5 team in America. Of all those things that happened, I would argue, Vern, the most impressive thing that Bill has done has been able to keep David McCormick. When you start to think about all the moves they brought in, David McCormick is a McDonald's All-American, as I mentioned, Vern. This is a guy, when you're a McDonald's All-American, you have aspirations in the, I'd say, 1 or 2 years to get to the league. If you're a big man like that, your thought is, let me go for a year, maybe two, and I want to get into the league. That's the mindset of these players, these young kids. Vern, he will not start for his first 2 years. And it has been evident and clear. He's not beating out Doak to start this year. Hell, he may not beat out Silvio because Silvio may not start this year. They may have a different type of lineup where they want more athleticism and more of a stretch shooter to be out there to play the four. He may be the first or the second big man off the bench. And somehow Bill Self has kept him in Kansas. Because you know it now, man. These kids, football, basketball, once they see their opportunity to not get to the next level is diminished, they'll leave after a year. I mean, they'll leave. And for him to keep David McCormick, who I think can be a big presence for this team, he's athletic. He's the guy who I said last year, okay, he looks like Kansas basketball players. But for him to keep him in was, I think, some of the most impressive things that he's done over an impressive summer.
Yeah, Bill Self said it, I think, perfectly yesterday when asked about a previous quote. Going into the offseason, Bill Self said, we need to hit at least a double this offseason when it comes to recruiting our own guys like Dotson and McCormick, keeping them here, but also bringing in recruits and transfers and whatnot. Bill Self said, I think we did a lot better than a double. This offseason has gone about as well as possible. Yeah, and the comments that he had about David McCormick, I don't think it's really good audio, so maybe we shouldn't play it.
Okay, so now I want to hear it.
No, I just don't know if – it's not the best of audio. It's a video from Jayhawkslant.com, the press conference that Bill Self had with David McCormick. I don't think the people need to hear it. It's basically what you were saying. You know, he's a
– Is it that bad?
I don't know. I have a high standard for audio on this show. I don't think this. I think this is. Maybe if we were doing your old show, but not this one.
You mean maybe if we were doing your old show?
No. That was the highest rated show on the station. My old show.
You played that garbage LeVar Ball audio yesterday, with the wind blowing in the background. You could barely hear what he was saying.
All right, fine.
best, most improved guy on our team, hands down. Hands down. He's his athletic ability has improved, and I know that's not easy to do in a short amount of time, but he's much more explosive, and his shooting ability is really improved. And I don't know if that'll translate, like, you know, day to day, but he's a guy that he can make a 17-footer. He's our best big shooter without question right now.
First off, you're going to stop taking out our baby. And second, you've played way worse than that.
Really?
Oh, yeah. You've played loud, spotty stuff. You've played way worse than that. I thought it was going to be just unrecognizable. Yeah, and that LeVar Ball stuff was much worse than that.
All right, I'm sorry. Get off my standard. Oh, Vern can't make a mistake.
The standard you have here.
I think that was pretty bad.
That was, but it was.
Man, both of you can shut up.
Vern has been played way worse than that.
You know, you find something worse.
Calm down, baby Jesus.
You gotta do that all instead. Right.
Calm down. He's got defense. Worse in him.
I want to find something worse.
I know a badger when I see one.
I'll fight the both of you right now.
I would love it. I know you asked me to pick up this trash can coming up. I know that much. I ran across this story about Atlanta Falcons receiver Mohamed Sanu. And I was like, hey, congratulations at first when I first ran through it that Mohamed Sanu is proposed to his lady, Danny something.
He's always a sneaky fantasy football play, like three or four times a year.
But he proposed to his young lady.
Danny Lee, Instagram model.
Yeah. She was graduating business school or whatever school.
Master's degree.
Yeah. And then I
haven't been looking at anything, so.
I know you haven't. Just guessing. Just spitballing here. And then, Vern,
just a guess.
I then saw that this is the second woman he's proposed to in the last year.
No. I don't blame him.
In the last 2 years, right?
2016, when he was with the Bengals, he popped the question to his girlfriend at a soccer match between Liverpool and Manchester City. So second time in 3 years, he has popped the question.
That's a lot of proposals.
Hey, man, the heart wants what it wants.
Yeah, why are you trying to tell Mohamed Sanu how to love?
I'm not trying to tell him how to love. You don't know how to love. So I don't even want to hear that from
Ron.
Well, he doesn't.
I haven't seen this other girl that he proposed to, but I would probably leave that girl for her, too.
I'm just saying, man, if I'm her, I'm wondering. Like, how long they've been together? A year? I think it says they've been together a year, and you just pop one a couple years ago, and now you're popping another one.
Well, they called off that wedding. It's not like they went through
with
the
wedding.
No,
I know. They called it off, but, I mean, I would imagine for females, you don't really like a proposed happy gentleman.
He's got to get married while he's still playing because he is a very, very pedestrian wide receiver. He's not going to be in the league much longer.
Yeah. He's going to be.
He's also 29, looks like he's going on 40.
Man. He's going to be a millionaire, so I think he's fine.
Oh, I feel really bad right now. I'm just looking all this story up. The first woman that he proposed to, how do I put this? They seem like she knew him before the money, if you know what I mean. And then this Instagram model showed up with her master's degree.
And then won him over. He Russell Wilson'd her?
Come on, Pat.
He Russell Wilson'd her.
Because I'm seeing this first proposal because he tweeted it out with hashtag future Mrs. Sanu and my baby.
and his what? His baby? Is that what you said?
That's how it's spelled. B-A-E-B-Y. Hashtag future Mrs. Sanu. And yeah, it's spelled that way.
And
she's wearing like all winter clothes and she looks very.
I'm just saying. Ladies,
he didn't have a lot of money until he got to Atlanta.
I am curious.
Atlanta gave him a pretty good contract.
From males and females. I know we got lady listeners out here. A guy is proposing, as if you were in a relationship with a guy who just proposed to somebody like a year before he met you, like what's the time frame where you're comfortable about the proposal again? I would.
Oh, you know what's real?
I mean, I would just think that you wouldn't want to be with a proposed happy person. Two proposals in 3 years?
Look,
damn near a dynasty.
But they both know what we're doing here. He's.
So you don't think it's real?
No.
Oh, God.
No, they're there for the walk.
You know I'm here about real love.
I Have you looked this up? Have you looked up these people? Did you just read the story?
No, I read the story and I looked up Danny. She's not bad.
That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about where he was and where he is now. The decision that he made was very superficial. No one's going to love you like the first one did, Muhammad. She knew you before the money.
Don't tell Dwayne Wade that.
Somebody tell Patrick Mahomes that.
This girl just got her master. She's going to make some money. She doesn't need Muhammad's money. Maybe they really are in love.
She probably could use it. Newsflash.
Serta's newsflash.
Last Chance U is back.
Oh, God.
Netflix will announce Tuesday that the popular docuseries focused on junior college football is returning on July 19th. Takes us again to Independence Community College to chronicle the final chaotic season of head coach Jason Brown, whose program went 2-8 his final year and saw him eventually resign for referring to himself as Hitler when texting a player.
I thought that I liked the show before he took it. Really, I mean, I haven't sat through his first year. His second one was unbearable. It was a really interesting show.
I thought they were going to
shut it down, but I don't know. I was the first 2 years when it was in Mississippi. I was really into it. Buddy Stevens used to kill me.
You watch so much trash television.
A lot of people watch trash television.
I didn't say they didn't, but you of this little threesome that we have here, you watch the most trash. Wife Swap.
Such a good show.
Oh, without a doubt. Teen Mom.
We once spent a happy hour.
Teen Mom was good last night.
And Ron explained to me maybe 6 different episodes of Wife Swap. He loves this show.
It's a great show.
It's an awful show.
You haven't even seen it.
No, but you explained 6 different episodes to me.
It was not that many.
It sounded awful. It sounded...
You were really into it.
No, I wasn't. I was just getting drunk. Letting you drone on about God knows what.
You knew exactly. You were participating in the conversation, and it wasn't just paralanguage you were using.
I was humoring you.
You weren't humoring. You were into it. Because you had follow-up questions. So she did what? They just... You
and
were
it makes it right. It makes me angry.
That's what you said. It would piss you. It pisses you right off.
You know, all that stuff's like scripted too, right? Like on those garbage reality shows.
Hey, dude, what are you doing here, man? Come on, man. Crybaby.
Crybaby. That is kind of a douche move. You know that's all scripted.
Just go away. Man. Like you don't watch no trash. You sit here and watch.
I don't.
You do. You watch a show.
Actually, Steve's got he's got a pretty good palate.
No, he watches a show that he hates, but just keeps watching it just because.
The Walking Dead sucks. It sucked for 6 years.
And he just keeps watching.
But people still watch it like crazy.
But you keep watching it. You said you won't stop watching.
Well, he does it for work for the Subject 9 podcast.
He just he was doing it before
and
he had that stupid
season,
podcast.
Actually, the best season they've had in a couple of years.
There you go. Stick with it.
Nobody believes
I still
you.
Hate watching.
Shop Talk. Shop Talk coming up. Shop Talk.
Burn, oh, brought to you by Crossroads Investment Lending. The fix and flip guys at KCLend.com.
Shop Talk coming up next. Welcome back into Vern's an Idiot on Show and Vern. Shop Talk, as we do every single Tuesday, coming in today. Fesco, Bob Fesco from Fesco in the Morning, which you can catch. It precedes us every day, 5:58 on the dot. And Brandon Kiley, executive producer of The Drive, which follows us. And remember, I think you're giving 16 pair of tickets away today on Ticket Tuesday, as well as at 5 o'clock. For your chance to win a 4-pack tickets to Toy Story 4. I got to hear this. We got time. I got to hear this. What is this game that you all were talking about that Brandon Kiley?
The game with no name?
Yeah, it's not good.
What happened?
Didn't go well.
What happened?
So Quentin Lucas beat me.
Quentin Lucas beat him. Sports Machine beat him.
Yeah. You got beat by a non-sports fan politician. Yeah. That's no good.
Well, he's a sports fan. He's a sports fan.
Yeah,
I'll give him that credit.
He's a fringe sports
fan.
Yeah,
but he only got like one team per... player.
Yeah, it wasn't good. It
wasn't
good.
What was
it? It was an
question?
Embarrassing. It basically, like the game with no name is they'll give you a category. So my category was Missouri athletes, and within that category
there's
they'll
not
give you
many.
Like, Yeah, six different players that played in a professional sport, and you have to name as many teams that that team played for in whatever professional sport that he played for in his career, and then you like move on to the next one.
Wait. What did Lucas get?
He got like 11. He ended up getting just like NFL players from the 2000s.
For the University of Missouri?
Mine was like professional athletes that grew up in Missouri. So that was
Alden Smith?
They did not use Alden Smith.
No, that would have been a good one.
Blaine Gabbert was
that
one.
Worked. So the Rush brothers.
David Cohn didn't give me the Rush brothers. No, we went real deep. We went real deep. Mm. Yeah, my category didn't go well for
you.
Want,
BK. You failed miserably.
What about that wide receiver? Who
like
was
you're not even from Missouri.
World.
You would have performed better. Yes,
he would have gotten a bunch of them on David Cohn. The problem was I only got like two on David Cohn, and so therefore my entire category was screwed because he had like 12 different options, and I just said next on him.
Yep. So anytime you guys want me to come on and dominate that game, I am.
So what do you mean he only got two on David Cohn? What does that mean?
So you have to say how many teams he played
for. Yeah. Oh, so you got to name the teams that he played for over the course
Blue
of his career.
Royals, Blue Jays, Yankees,
Mets.
And you just won. You just beat BK.
You just beat me by a landslide. Right.
I had time to think about it.
I had time to
it's
think
about it.
It's
hard when you're on the spot, though. I mean, that's why those trivia games
are so. We don't have to give me any excuses. It was an embarrassing performance.
It ain't that damn hard. It wasn't hard for Quentin.
It sounds really difficult.
I didn't even hear it.
I did not get any baseball question. No, you're not invited on this.
No,
show.
You're not. Never. I wanted to pose this to you all because yesterday we talked about this and CBS had an article where it was like the Chiefs at 10.5 wins is where it's set. And when I hear that, I think the under is 10 wins. And when I hear that, I think that's a team battling for a playoff spot. All my life, 9-7, 10-6 is you're battling for a playoff spot. And I said this. I would admit right now that I think many Chiefs fans are like me, that I feel like maybe I'm too close because I cannot in any way see this team winning just 10 games.
Oh, God.
Barring a major injury. And I everything they said made sense. You know, we don't know if Mahomes is going to play at the same level he did. You've got 7-8 new starters coming in. Teams have had time looking at this defense, the schedule, and they play a difficult schedule. The quarterbacks, if you just look at the quarterbacks they play. But still, none of it swayed me to thinking, well, no, if they don't win 12 games without a major injury, I will be as close to shocked as you can.
Well, I think when you look at a team that's coached by Andy Reid, Andy Reid wins 9-10 games just rolling out of bed. And Patrick Mahomes has proven he can win in such extreme situations, so he's good for another two right there. So I'm looking at 10.5, and I think the over's free money. Like, I really do. I think with Andy Reid as the head coach, you know you're going to win at least 9 or 10 games. And then when you have the MVP as your quarterback, you have the opportunity to take that to a new level. And they won 12 games a season ago and made the AFC Championship game with the worst defense in the National Football League. Just the addition by subtraction makes this defense better. The scheme makes this defense better. The players that they added in makes this defense better. So I think 10.5, taking the over, is a lock for this football team.
So Andy Reid's been a head coach in the NFL for 20 seasons. He's won at least 11 games in 10 of them. So you got a 50-50 shot of hitting the over-under, which is probably why Vegas set the over-under at 10.5 for this team. I will say this, though. I mentioned this on my show on Saturday, and I'd be curious on getting your thoughts on this. I just don't care about the regular season this year. Like, if they win 10 games, fine. If the Chargers win the division, fine. I care about what this team does in the postseason.
Yeah, I disagree with that. I disagree with that because in football, in the NFL, playing games at home in the playoffs to me is a different deal.
It didn't matter last year. It didn't matter last year because the Patriots came in here.
You can't compare anybody to the Patriots. You can't compare teams to the Patriots.
We've seen the Chiefs go into New England, though, and win in the past. Yeah. Not in the playoffs, but we've seen them do it and win in the past. And also, Patrick Mahomes changes things.
Football, to me, you have to put yourself in the best chance possible.
Sure.
And playing games in Arrowhead is just – I'm not saying it's a guarantee.
How many
– We've seen it. We've seen it for years.
How many night games have they won at Arrowhead lately?
I think the Arrowhead mystique is so overrated. I mean, the teams come in here. They say, I like playing in Arrowhead. I think it's fun to play in Arrowhead. And you look at the playoff record in Arrowhead. It ain't that sweet for this team. I think the Arrowhead thing is the most overrated thing that we talk about because the team does not take care of business when they have the opportunity at Arrowhead Stadium. I think playing away takes a little bit of pressure off of them where they don't have to go out there and play. So to me, I'm with BK. I don't give a rat's behind what they do in the regular season.
Really?
As long as they make it into the playoffs and have a chance to compete for a Super Bowl, I just don't think the home field advantage is all that. Yeah. I think it's a fan
mindset. The home field
mindset.
Advantage and the bye are –
big deals.
I think the buys.
You can't have a buy if you don't win the division.
All things being equal, you'd prefer to get the one seed, obviously, no question about it. But the reason why I'm saying this is because in the past, I think it's mattered in Kansas City to win a division. I think it's mattered in Kansas City to have the MVP on your team. The regular season accomplishments mattered. They felt fulfilling at one point. They no longer feel fulfilling.
No more. I don't care
about the MVP anymore.
Nobody's
going to celebrate an AFC West title next year. Nobody's going to celebrate hosting the AFC Championship game. Next year is about the Super Bowl. That's the only stated goal going into the season. And so whether that happens with the one seed or the six seed, I don't much care. Obviously, the one seed makes it easier because you have to play fewer games and you get to host that game at home throughout the playoffs. But ultimately, this season is going to be judged not by what they do in the regular season, which I think has been the case in the past with Andy Reid here in Kansas City, but it's going to be judged based on what he does this year in the playoffs.
And that's what ultimately got Andy Reid run out of Philadelphia. I mean, he's a great regular season guy, but just couldn't get the job done once he got into the playoffs. I mean, that's to me what it's all about. Everybody's like, well, how are you going to judge Mahomes this year? Did he go to a Super Bowl? Like, that's the only thing I'm judging him on this year. That's the only thing I care about, what this team does. If they stumble and stub their toe in the regular season, they still make it into the playoffs and they have a chance to compete and make it to the Super Bowl. That's how this team is going to be judged. I'm 100% with you, BK. I don't care about a division championship or an MVP anymore. All of that is for stuff for teams that don't have that stuff. The Chiefs have that stuff. It's all about the Super Bowl this year.
Yeah, you fall short of the Super Bowl this season. It goes from pressure on Andy and Pat to heat.
Heat, yeah.
On Andy and Pat going into next season. Questions of whether or not they can really win the big one. This conversation reminds me of something you said this morning, Bob, and you've said before, and it's something that pushes me towards what BK's saying. You said that it might take a few weeks for Steve Spagnuolo's defense to truly round into shape into the season.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? If that cost him a game in week one or week two, but you're playing your best defense in week 17, that cost you the division. I'll take that. I would much rather, and we all would, rather than play their best all-around football come week 17 than week one. Because the case can be made, they were playing their best football last year in those first few weeks.
That's right.
And some of their weakest football at the end.
And you look at Steve Spagnuolo, what he did with the Giants the year that they won the Super Bowl. The first 2 weeks, they gave up 80 points combined, and everybody's like, oh my God, this guy's terrible. We got to get rid of this guy. At the end of the year, I think they ended up 9-7 and won 3 road playoff games and beat the Patriots in the Super Bowl. Nobody remembers the 80-some points they gave up the first couple of weeks, or really, quite honestly, what the record was. You remember they went and beat the Patriots in the Super Bowl, and they shut down Tom Brady. They limited Tom Brady. I think the final was like 17-10. In that Super Bowl. They limited that offense that year, that was the highest scoring offense in NFL history at that time, to 10 points in the Super Bowl because that defense came into form. Nobody remembers the regular season. Nobody remembers who they beat in the regular season, who they lost to. I don't know if Eli Manning was the MVP that year, but I know they won the Super Bowl, and I know they held the Patriots to 10 points, and that was the story of the game. Look at the way this defense came into form, and when they needed to step up the most, man, they held New England, a 500-point team, to 10 points in the Super Bowl. That's all that matters.
I think we all agree that the Super Bowl is a— I'm not saying to celebrate we're going to go buy our T-shirts for the AFC West Championship. I'm just saying you have to go through things to make it easier to get to this. It's about the Super Bowl. And in football is different to me than basketball. If the Lakers got the 4 seed or LeBron got the 4 seed, that's just not as big of a deal because it's different in that form. It's a 7-game series.
Yes,
right. Here, it's 1 game. You get to play less games. And teams, you could look at— I know you know numbers. You know the numbers. The teams that are the 1 and 2 seeds, they get a chance to make it to the Super Bowl at a much higher rate than all of the other teams.
But I think that's changed a lot over recent years.
It has not. No.
If you see wild card teams making it to the Super
Bowl,
it's really rare.
Over the Patriots are a 1 and 2 seed every year.
I think it's over the last, but you're not comparing things to the Patriots.
Right, but I'm just saying, has it changed? They've been going to the Super Bowl a lot of the AFC.
6-7 years, I think it's like 10 of the 12 that made it ultimately had a bye. So to get a 1 or 2 seed does matter. And I'm not trying to say that it doesn't.
No,
I'm just saying, like, but my main point here is that I'm not judging this team based on the regular season accomplishments. So to kind of go back to what your original question was on the over-under, I'd probably take the under because I think 10 wins sounds about right for this team, but that's not going to bother me. I'm going to go into this season saying the only goal is the Super Bowl, and so even if you win 9-10 games and you get into the playoffs as a 5 seed, That's fine so long as you're able to make it work once you get there. And I believe this team has the talent and the coaching to be able to do it and to be able to overcome what is obviously not the the preferred route, which would be a one or a two
I just
seed.
Want Dubai to have the rest for those guys at that point. Right. That's sure. the only thing I care about.
And I think it's also reflected in our attitudes about Patrick Mahomes going into the season. I don't think anyone minds if he takes a step back from 5,000 yards and 50 touchdowns. He can still impress even if his numbers regress. Yeah. I think it's a conversation that we've all had. You can show that killer instinct. You can show that champion mentality with lesser than numbers, sure. right? Tom Brady's not one that's lighting up the scoreboard. So the same way we don't care about the regular season record as much as we care about the postseason now, we don't care about the MVP award the same way we care about finding a way to win against New England in the AFC title game.
If his numbers drop and he has 35 touchdowns and, you know, 3,500 yards and the Chiefs win the Super Bowl, nobody's going to care what
that's
his numbers are.
Yeah.
I mean, ask Patriot fans what Tom Brady's numbers were last year. I'm sure they have no idea what Tom Brady's numbers are. But we walk around and talk about 50 and 5,000 because that was the best thing that happened last year for the Chiefs.
Once again, as we do every Tuesday, Shop Talk, we bring in two people from some of the shows, day shows, afternoon drive show, even Binkley from time to time. I want to change gears to the Royals here. And a lot of people are impressed with Soler because of the home runs and the things that he's doing on the field. For me, I'm impressed with that. But for me, it feels like he is finding the tone of how he should play. In the last couple of weeks, I think Ryan Lefevre and them during the broadcast really brought this to me. Like, his intensity level looks different than a team that is on pace to lose 112 games. And I don't remember Soler playing with that type of intensity. Even last night, and I know you may have been asleep.
Long asleep. Yeah.
Even last night.
That home run.
He hit that out. Like, he didn't look like a guy who's just playing in Seattle that's 24 games back. He looked like amped, happy, like he was playing in a playoff chase or some sort of postseason chase. And he's looked like that for a couple of weeks. He's been pissed when he strikes out or things don't go away. And I said this to Vern. He looked at me funny. I said, it reminds me when Lorenzo Cain turned a page in terms of how he approached the game and became more intense. That's the number one thing that I've been impressed with here recently with Soler. It looks like he's finding himself.
Well, that's good. Maybe he's developing some confidence. I think once you get into that kind of zone and you feel like you're swinging at a beach ball all day, you're going to develop that confidence. And I think with the confidence comes the swagger. That's something this team needs. I mean, like, my gosh, you look around and you think, like, who's going to bring the swagger? Who's going to bring the confidence? Maybe Soler can bring that guy, be that guy. Maybe he can be that guy that everybody kind of gets on the bandwagon and starts to follow a little bit. But also for his sake, too, I mean, he's coming up to the point of the Royals are going to have to decide here next year or two whether they want to extend him long term or let him go or what his future is going to be. So start playing well right now and make that an easy decision for the Royals to be part of the future with all of these young kids that are coming up. You're going to need some kind of veteran presence and some kind of leader. And it's hard to lead and be a veteran presence if you're not getting the job done. And now he's on pace to shatter Moose's record for home runs. And I think if you got that type of presence and that type of leader and that type of attitude in there that we're not going to accept mediocrity, maybe that's something that can rub off on some of these younger players.
I wonder how much of it is because he's not playing the field anymore. Because if you're Jorge Soler and every night you know going out there, I'm terrible at this. Like, this is not going to go well. I know I'm no good in the field. Everybody that's here knows I'm no good in the field. And every time the ball comes towards me, I'm waiting for something terrible to happen. That's got a weigh on your confidence, right? At some point, you look at yourself and you're like, man, I am one of the best power hitters in all of baseball. I know that to be true. I'm really bad at this other thing, and this team keeps telling me that I'm going to get better at it, and I'm just not getting any better at it. And it's got to be frustrating. You go out there time and time again, and you fail every time you do it over years of your career. And then you add in the injuries, and you're just waiting for something to happen. And so now he's finally able to do the one thing that he's always been really good at. For his entire life, he's been better at basically one thing than everybody else that he's around. And that's hitting the ball really hard and really far. And he's doing that. And he's showcasing the skill that the Royals brought him in here to showcase whenever they first traded for him. And it's working. And now the strikeouts are going down. The walks are going up a little bit. You can see the plate discipline becoming what the Royals have sold us on since day one that they traded for him. This is the player that they hoped that they would be getting. Now, they hoped he could play right field. That didn't work out. But if he becomes, and Carrington Harrison made this comparison the other day, if he becomes a Kendrys Morales type of hitter inside of that lineup,
That's all you can possibly ask for. And so if he becomes that, this has been a success, even though it took longer than we all expected.
Well, and that seems to be the thing with baseball, though. Everything takes longer than it should, doesn't it, Vern? Sure. I mean, like every single day you get somebody new to talk about, and, oh, it's going to take months, it's going to take years. Like baseball is willing to wait forever and a day for guys to achieve success. And I think when you eliminate something that you're not very good at and just focus on what you're really good at, that obviously helps. I mean, it helps clear the mind as well. I mean, he can just go out there and worry about hitting, and you can get better at that, and you can spend more time worrying about getting better at hitting than wasting time trying to not butcher yourself and spike yourself in the outfield.
You mentioned baseball's willing to wait forever for something to develop. Baseball is, fans normally aren't. To me, Jorge Soler suffered the same kind of fate that Edelberto Mondesi did, where you come up, you fail, we put a ceiling on you and say, you're this. You can never be more than this. We're starting to learn this season that the 23-year-old Mondesi actually has a much higher ceiling than the guy that came up when he was 19 in the World Series. Jorge Soler, 6 months younger than Hunter Dozier, but I think the average Royals fan would look at Dozier and go, his ceiling is this, but we're so used to watching failure from Jorge Soler that his ceiling is somewhere down here. We've also never seen Jorge Soler on June 18th.
That's true.
In his career,
the first time he's ever played in June,
or he is down in the minor leagues. I mean, this is his sixth season in the big leagues and the first time he's been healthy on June 18th. So that, I think, is a reflection in the confidence as well.
Well, and also not playing the field. I mean, that's going to keep you healthy, not having to go out there and not only run after balls, but stand there. I mean, you stand there for a while, your team's getting rocked, your back's going to give out eventually. You know, they talked about that in spring training a few years ago.
I brought this up to Ron prior to the show. Interested in your thoughts. Darwin Thompson, the more I listen to Eric Bieniemy and Andy Reid, they sound as if they are begging Darwin Thompson to take the job from Damian Williams, begging Darwin Thompson to jump over Carlos Hyde on this depth chart. To me, if I could choose one chief, other than the, you know, Mahomes has already shown you that he's a star, Kelsey and the rest. If I had to pick one chief to hit in 2019, I think Darwin Thompson gives them their best offense. If he becomes the player who was a top 10 running back in college football last year, if he can be that dual threat out of the backfield, receiving and rushing, I think he is the one that puts this team in the best position to be their best selves offensively. Who would you guys point to as that one chief you would ideally like to see hit in 2019?
For me, it's simple. I think the name that immediately comes to mind is Juan Thornhill. Last year, for as much as we talk about the corners weren't the biggest issue on this team. They were an issue, and I've certainly talked about them ad nauseum, as you have, show, that I think it's an issue that they still need to address. But last year, if you look at some of the games that they played, the guys that were killing them were slot players, slot receivers, tight ends, and running backs over the middle. It was the middle of the field that was an abject failure for this defense. So you fix that by bringing in a coverage linebacker like Darren Lee, who is absolutely limited, but in terms of coverage, is pretty good. You bring in Tyrann Mathieu, who should help you out in the middle of the field. And if Juan Thornhill actually ends up hitting, if he's a really good safety, now all of a sudden the middle of the field's kind of taken care of. And now your corners aren't, they're not on the island quite as much as they were a year ago. You're able to take care of the tight ends and the running backs across the middle of the field. Now the receivers are kind of a secondary point that you have to worry about. Juan Thornhill would be my answer to this question.
I think for me, it's Breland Speaks. I mean, we were talking about today, Daniel Jeremiah speaking to the Chargers about how he judges a team based on quarterback and pass rush. And
obviously,
we've got the quarterback taken care of, and the pass rush needs to be better for this organization. There's no question about it. With what you have, you've got, you know, obviously Clark as one of your pass rushers. You've got Chris Jones when he's here coming up the middle. But I think this is like Breland Speaks' time to shine. I think this is why you drafted Breland Speaks, and I think this is the best opportunity he's going to have. If you see a guy like Breland Speaks with double-digit sacks this year, this defense is going to be impressive, impressive, impressive.
Double-digit sacks?
I take it. I said if you pick a guy that you'd like to see star, and I'd like to see Breland Speaks star.
We talked about him, and we were just trying to figure out, like, what is the Breland Speaks – like, I can see Juan Thornhill, like, he jumps out. He could have
– sure.
He could – or it's so hard now from just the 1 year, and I know that's unfair to – but just the 1 year, what
is
would
he?
Look
what
like?
Is Breland Speaks?
I don't even –
But what is Juan Thornhill? We've never seen that guy play in the NFL, and we have seemingly have more confidence.
But you've got
in
the belief and the hope. Like, there's a hope with a guy that you just drafted, and it could be false hope. It could be like this guy might be terrible this year. We have no idea.
No idea.
But it's the belief of this guy was a second round pick who was getting a lot of hype coming into the draft. You watch some of the stuff that he did at Virginia. He looks like a guy that's always around the ball, and you hope he's a ball hawking safety back there. With Breland Speaks, we've now seen it for a year. So we kind of have at least an idea of what it
looks.
Haven't
seen much, though, for a year right. at him.
He
like,
played quite a bit.
He played quite a bit when Houston was
no,
out.
No, I'm with you, though. We didn't. He did play quite a bit, but I didn't see much from him.
That's the problem, though,
is.
Right?
Right.
That's the issue.
And I think that defensive system was kind of miscast for a lot of them. I think switching that's roles true. Up and being in a 4-3 is going to be a lot better for Breland Speaks than what we saw a season ago. And I think sometimes with young guys in the NFL, it's like young guys in baseball, man, we're ready to cast our like Eric Fisher, if we just judged him on the first year that he played in Kansas City, he'd have been cut
Chris
after
Jones
that
too.
First year. Chris Jones, kind of the same way, yeah. A lot of these young guys, we judge right away, oh, we got our minds made up, and there's no way they can get out of the doghouse, and we're ready to give a guy who's been drafted, who's never played a down in the NFL, more hope and more promise than a guy who may be a little bit slower to the party, you know?
Yeah, I don't know what position Breland plays.
No, well, neither does the defensive coaching staff. You heard Spags say he can do a little bit of anything.
Did you guys see his body, the pictures from training or mini camp?
I'm not gonna let you just talk about big people like that, man. He got a little hungry as somebody.
PK is the only one that can judge someone else's body.
No, he can't. No, he cannot judge that.
He can actually.
What do you do? You must look at me funny when I come up the steps.
He does when you're
Ron,
out of breath.
Ron, your job is to be a radio host.
Yeah, we all do, Ron.
Breland Speaks is supposed to be a pass-rushing defensive end, and you look at the pictures and...
You don't need to... We all look at you weird, Ron.
I hate you, Vern. Appreciate
Chris
you guys.
Jones' body look, though. I mean, that's not like an Adonis.
Nah, he don't look like Breland Speaks.
Yeah, and he doesn't look like Ron either.
I don't know. We haven't seen him all yet.
Come on, man.
Get off Ron, man.
Lord, man. I'm trying. Hard, but I am trying. All right, appreciate you guys stepping on with us. Coming up, I don't even worry about Patrick Mahomes taking a step back, especially with Andy Reid there. Oh, but however, I do think there is a concern that we could make or have in our minds that there could be something that could stop him from going past the level of elite. I'll explain that next.
Show and Burn, brought to you by Crossroads Investment Lending, the fix and flip guys at kclend.com.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.